delightful to be back here in East London. I was here a few Fridays ago. It was the first time I'd been in East London for about 3 years. And you don't see me for 3 years, and then you get me twice in 1 month. Today, we're going to talk about follow me and find me. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about Jesus Christ. We're here to talk about Jesus Christ. If you do a poll amongst people, generally who is considered to be the one person who has influenced human history more than any other, most times Jesus Christ will come top of that poll. Most people would say that he had the most extraordinary life and the most extraordinary impact over thousands of years, more than anybody else who has ever lived. And one of the great tragedies of our time is that everybody knows about Jesus, but not very many people really do know about Jesus. They've heard the name. They know about the cross. But do they really understand who he is and what is he really all about? 29 years ago, I was one such person who had a faith in God, but still was confused about who Jesus really was, who he really is. And I was searching for answers. Penny and I were engaged. We were church hunting and hopping and looking, trying to find out who Jesus really is. He's an amazing person, but who is he? And what does he mean for me? And in that year, 1984, I received a letter on my birthday, which is the 14th of February, in case if any of you want to write it down and remember that. And on that day, I received a letter, and that letter came from Julie here. Julie Inglis, as she was then. D'Souza came later. She wrote to me, and she told me about the church she had joined in London. I wasn't living in London at the time. And she told me about this church, and about how it had helped her to understand what it really meant to follow Jesus Christ. I wasn't living in London. I wasn't planning to live in London. In fact, if you'd asked me the last place on earth I would ever want to live, I would have said London. And I've been here most of the last 20-odd years. And she wrote to me, and she told me about the church, and I came to visit the church in the summer of 1984, and I was very interested to see a church that operated very differently from the way that I understood what church meant to be. And then I started coming to church regularly when I moved to London that year, and I began to understand by looking at the lives of the people around me, the lives of the people at church, and looking at the Bible, I began to understand what it really meant to follow Jesus Christ. And I discovered this. As I began to understand how to follow Jesus and what it meant to follow Jesus, and I saw the examples of people following Jesus, I then made the decision to actually follow Jesus as a disciple. And I believe I'm talking to a group of people here today who are in different places in our decision to follow Jesus Christ. I think some of us have been following Jesus Christ for many a year. You've been doing that for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or perhaps like me, for me it's my 29th year. Perhaps it's even longer for you. Some of us perhaps have not yet decided to follow. In fact, we haven't even thought about it very much. And I hope today that you will. Some of us have been thinking about following Jesus, perhaps especially those of us who've grown up in and around the church. And you've been hearing about Jesus for a long time, mostly from your parents. And perhaps this is the time for you to consider about truly following Jesus. I have a very simple aim today. I hope that looking at this passage we're going to study in Matthew chapter 8, I hope that as we do this, we will identify particularly our fears. Our fears that prevent wholehearted discipleship, wholeheartedly following Jesus. And I pray that as we identify those fears, we will find out what it is that prevents discipleship and prevents us from actually discovering who Jesus really is. You will never know who he is unless you are willing to actively follow. That's something we will find in this passage. We will follow him. I pray that we will make the decision then to deal with our fears so that we will follow Jesus wholeheartedly, whether some of us need to re-follow or follow for the first time. I pray that we will be wholehearted and we will find out who Jesus really is. Let's have a look at our passage. Let's turn to Matthew 8 and read this passage before us today and ask that God would reveal what he wants us to learn. Matthew chapter 8, let's pick up the story in verse 19. And I'm in the wrong verse. Verse 18, I beg your pardon. Okay. Verse 18. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown." He replied, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." That question is central to this passage, and I think it's central to our lives. What kind of man is this? What kind of man is it that lives 2,000 years ago and still people worship him 2,000 years later? What kind of man is this that dies on a cross? What kind of man is this that performs so many miracles? What kind of man is this who said, "My teachings come from God, and if you disobey my teachings, you disobey God"? What kind of man is this who says, "I am God in the flesh"? What kind of man is this that says, "If you believe in me, you trust in me, and you follow me, you'll have life eternal"? What kind of man is this who says that my words are eternal life? What kind of man is this? This is no ordinary man or woman. This is no ordinary person. This is somebody extraordinary. And what we see here is even those who were his disciples did not yet fully understand exactly who he was. They are in the boat with him. They are following him and they are still amazed. What kind of man is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. I pray that today, as we will make our decision to follow Jesus wholeheartedly, that we will find out who he truly is and be amazed at him. I got 2 points today as we go through, firstly, into the boat. We're going to be talking about going into the boat, and then we're going to be talking about going into the storm. But into the boat first. "Follow me into the boat," Jesus says. You know, these two men that come up to Jesus, I rather like them. I mean, I think they're quite impressive. If someone came up to you and said, "I'll follow you wherever you go," assuming you wanted them to follow you. I mean, there may be a bit of a creepy thing going on there, but let's just assume, okay, that, I mean, Jesus wants followers, right? He's trying to get followers. He's talking to the crowds. He's saying, "Follow me." I mean, isn't this exactly what he wants? People coming up to him and saying, wholeheartedly, it appears, "I will follow you wherever you go." That's pretty good. And the second guy, I mean, I still like him, even though he's a little bit, you know, "I've got to go and do this first, but let me go and bury my father." I mean, isn't that a commendable thing? You know, he's caring about his father, he's caring about his family, I suppose. I mean, it's not like he's saying, "I want to go and do something really sinful and nasty and evil." I like these men. But isn't it interesting? Jesus, it looks to me, it's almost like he gives them a hard time. "Don't you want any followers? He says to the first man, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Birds have nests. That's a bird box in our back garden. I sat there a long time with my telephoto lens to take that photograph of a blue tit coming out of the box. Even birds have a bird's nest, bird box. This morning I was having my prayer time in our garden, and I was sitting very near to where a robin is nesting in some ivy on our garden shed. And I sat there as I was praying and watching the bird. There's an egg in the nest now, so the bird is coming in to feed. I suppose they take turns. Do they take turns? The robins take turns. But different birds do this different ways. Anyway, it's coming into the nest to sit on the egg, and it's keeping its eye on me because I'm quite close, you know. But even though I'm really close, like I'm as close as I am to the front row to where the nest is, the bird will still come in and sit. It has a nest. And the foxes, though foxes aren't kind of popular these days, but even foxes have somewhere to go. Hopefully not your bin in your back garden, but they have a den. They have somewhere to go. But he says, I, the creator in flesh, I don't have anywhere to put my head. Rather challenging, isn't it? What is he saying to that first man? Let's take these two men separately. I think he's saying, if you really want to be a follower, if you really want to follow me, I think you need to understand, you need to be sober about what this will take. I read it as this, and I think there are different ways you can read it, but my take on it is I think the first man is overconfident. I think he's overconfident. He's like, Jesus, I'm a follower, you're a teacher, I'll follow you, no problem. I don't think yet he's counted the cost. I don't think at this point he's truly sober about the commitment. I don't think he realizes it's going to take more than he expects. Let's face it, in life, if you need something from somebody, do you want somebody overconfident? I mean, if you're going in for surgery, you know, my wife's a doctor, and she's a very meticulous doctor. You want a meticulous doctor, don't you? If you're going in for surgery, you don't want the surgeon to say, who are you again? What are you here for? Some kind of, you want your leg amputated? Oh no, you're having a baby. Okay, all right then. So, whatever. Just take you into surgery. We'll figure it out as we go along. You wouldn't stay long in that hospital, right? I mean, you want the meticulous surgeon. You don't want the overconfident person. I think this person is not sober. I think he thought that following Jesus wouldn't cost him very much, that it might just be a nice ride. He would be safe. And I think Jesus is saying, you know, if you follow me, I can guarantee you it'll be worth it. I can guarantee you, you will find out what you're here for, and you will find a relationship with God, and you will find meaning and purpose. But I cannot guarantee you that it will be safe. It will not be safe. I don't even know where I'm sleeping tonight. It's not safe. Sometimes we look for safety, and the very thing that we think will give us safety is the thing that traps us and is deadly in the end. Recently, we've had a problem in our house. We've had a mice infestation. Little droppings everywhere. And 3 weeks ago, I think it was, we set traps, poison. I mean, I don't know. And we run out of ideas, you know. And I don't like cats, but, you know, I'm even contemplating we might have to get a cat. I don't know. But we had these mice everywhere. And about 3 weeks ago, I came down for breakfast. It was Sunday morning, actually. I came down for breakfast. I put some toast in the toaster. And I went off to make a cup of tea. You know, the kettle's on. And I... Something smells a bit funny. I went back to the toaster. And I thought, it smells a bit strange. Anyway, I went back to the kettle, it boiled, made the tea. Something really doesn't smell. You know, have you ever burned your hair in a candle or something like that? That kind of smell? This isn't good. I went over to the toaster and I turned it off and I looked inside. Hang on. Nice looking toaster. This is our toaster. I looked inside. There were two baby mice. Just there and there. Nicely toasted. So if any of you would like to buy a toaster. So here's the thing. I mean, I didn't eat the toast. But you know, it was Sunday morning. I was just going through the last minute preparations on my sermon. So rather than deal with it, I decided that it was important. I put the toaster outside in the garden and decided it was important that my wife deal with it when she got back from walking the dog. So she dealt with the mice and I dealt with the sermon. But actually, I did clean it out and we do still use it. I know some of you are... Listen, this is an expensive toaster. I mean, what? It's really... We've only had it a few months. I mean, it's a nice toaster. My son will not use this toaster. He only makes toast under the grill now. He won't touch it. But I don't care. Anyway, so... The toaster. The mice were attracted to the toaster because it had lots of breadcrumbs in it. Tasty. They thought a perfect, ideal source of food. They did not realize that the very place that seemed like it was giving them what they needed was going to kill them. You know, sometimes we think that it's the next relationship that will fulfill us. It's the next promotion that will fulfill us. It is the next thing, whatever, the next house, the next project, the next hobby, the next accolade, the next child, the next thing. But those are the very things that trap us and prevent us from wholeheartedly following Jesus Christ. We must give up everything to follow Jesus Christ. He is worth nothing less than everything. Wholeheartedness is what will save us. Not playing safe. The first man is, I think, overconfident and is not sober. Let us be sober. It is about everything. But the second man, I read it like this. He says, first go and bury my father in verse 21. In that culture, it was a son's duty to bury his father. It was very significant and important. I mean, it seems a little harsh, doesn't it? That Jesus says, just follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Not terribly encouraging. But what's going on? I think the second man, what Jesus is identifying in the second man, is that he is hesitant. I think he's hesitant. I don't think he's fully committed himself to being a disciple. The phrase, he who hesitates is lost, is not in the Bible, but I think that principle is so important that we need to take the opportunities when they come to become a disciple. We're not set our own terms or our own time scale for these things. There are times for urgent action in following Jesus Christ. Many years ago, we lived in Manchester. And our daughter on the screen there, I suppose she was about 5 or 6 years old. We were in a part of Manchester called Didsbury. And we were crossing the road, about to cross the road. As we stood at the traffic lights, the Pelican Crossing, whatever it was, I think all of us were there as a family. All of a sudden there was a motion at my left shoulder. And I didn't know what was going on, but I just felt, you know when you feel someone near you is moving fast? And there was this motion. And Lydia was there, our daughter. And then this bus, which I hadn't really noticed, went right past us. Like you know when something along the road, you're standing on the pavement and it goes past you. You feel like it's right past your face. This bus went past us. I looked down, there was Lydia, and somebody had pulled her back. She had been about to step into the path of the bus. And to this day, I don't know who it was. But we noticed that this had happened. And that person saved her life. What if they had hesitated? Yesterday was our daughter's 25th birthday. Isn't she pretty? She's single. Actually, to be honest, the real reason I'm here is to interview some potential suitors. But it's wonderful. She's in Indonesia, in Jakarta, Indonesia, teaching over there. And it was wonderful to talk to her on Skype yesterday and just catch up. And she's 25 years old. I have a daughter who's a quarter of a century old. I feel a little old, but I am very happy. Someone saved her life. Could it be that now is this time of decision for some of us here to follow Jesus while we have the chance, to not hesitate like this man? These times may not come round again. You say, well, I'm here every week and, you know, I'll be here next week and the week after and, you know, eventually I might make my decision. But you don't even know what's going to happen this afternoon. None of us know. Come on, let's be honest. I'm not trying to be melodramatic. It's just true. We may not survive another day or two. But also, we can't guarantee the state of our heart in a week or two or three or four. Who knows what might creep into our hearts to prevent us from being here or being interested in following Jesus Christ. Let's not be hesitant. Jesus doesn't say to the man, you will never see your family again. He just says, this isn't the right priority for you right now. And we all have priorities. Even those of us who are so laid back, we say, I don't have any priorities, I just sort of drift through life. Even the fact you're drifting through life, that's your priority. You just want to drift. Everybody has priorities. We can adjust them at any time we choose. We decide what's important to us. And we can decide that Jesus is important. More important than anyone else. Did you hear about this fella, Stuart Astill? He's 67 years old. He might be Britain's most dedicated football fan. He missed his first Nottingham Forest game in 40 years recently. He's been to every game for 40 years, home and away. He watched 1,786 matches consecutively. In his lifetime, he's watched 2,533 games starting in 1956. Most of us weren't even born then, and he was going to the Forest ground. He's travelled over 100,000 miles watching his team by coach, car and plane. That's what you call a dedicated fan. We decide our priorities. You say, well, I'm not like that. No, but maybe you're like Sarah. Some of you know Sarah Steele. She's in the central region of the London Church. I asked her about her dedication because, you know, she's kind of one of these naturally fanatical people, I think. Before she was a member of the church, she grew up in Sweden, and she used to be part of an animal rights group there. She said that I asked her about it, she said we had meetings every week, and every weekend we met in town to give out flyers. This is for animal rights. Sometimes, she said, we cooked vegan food. She's a vegan. She's very passionate about it. We cooked vegan food and gave it out for free on the streets to show people that vegan food could be tasty. It took a lot of my time. And we turned up, whatever the weather, to do demonstrations. We had to have a lot of courage. They did blockades outside shops and food chains, standing up against angry farmers on fur farms, even against the police at times. She said, I was happy to spend my money, my time, my effort to dedicate my life to something I believed in and found really important. Often people got angry or abusive just because I was willing to stand up for animals, animal rights. I built great friendships and had lots of fun adventures. One year we started an anti-circus group, and every day for the whole summer we followed a circus and protested outside. Every day. It was tiring. Sometimes it was only me and one other person. We spent hours traveling and we got a lot of abuse from the circus staff, but it was worth it, she says, just knowing that one day, animals will have a better life. What dedication to something you believe in. But you know, and that's impressive. Whether you agree with it all, it's impressive. And how much more significant it is to follow Jesus Christ, so that ours and other people's souls will be saved, not for a period of time, but for eternity. What makes us hesitant? What makes us overconfident? Why not be wholehearted in following Jesus Christ? That's our first situation here with these first two people. They need to get in the boat. They're not in the boat. They want to discuss terms with Jesus Christ. But Jesus says, follow me wholeheartedly and get into the boat. And some of us here, even today, need to make the decision to get in the boat with Jesus. To get studying the Bible, to repent of sin, to become a disciple, to be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, or maybe to be restored so that we can play our full part of discipleship and find out who Jesus really is. Let's get into the boat. But secondly, the second thing we need to do is get into the boat so that we can follow him into the storm. Jesus says, follow me in two ways here. He says, follow me into the boat. And then he says, follow me into the storm. I don't know about you. I don't like storms. And he didn't tell them when they got in the boat that a storm was coming, but I fancy he rather knew. They get into the boat in verse 23, and I have a few fun little pictures for you there. So they get into the boat, nice little sailing weather. Any of you sail? I mean, no, Barry goes sailing sometimes. You get into the boat, very nice. They get into the boat. And they're going across the lake from Capernaum to the region of the Gerasenes. That's the rough direction they're going. And they're having a nice time. There's the seagulls and there's the fishing and whatever else they're doing. But then a furious storm. And on Lake Galilee, even though it's only a lake, these storms were legendary. They were a sudden squall. And they were really, really very bad. And the word in the Greek that's used for this storm is seismos, which is the word we get from seismology. And so it's a word that also indicates like an earthquake. It would be like an earthquake under the sea. So the sort of thing that causes a tsunami. I mean, that's what they're feeling like. Their whole world is shaking apart and the waves are going everywhere. And it says the waves are going over the boat and they're very frightened. And the waves are sweeping over the boat. And there is Jesus. And what is he doing? He is sleeping. He is asleep in the middle of all this. The disciples are panicking, running around the boat. I mean, think about it. The Hebrews in general did not like the sea. They had a thing about the sea. It was one of those things, I don't know why, but Israelite people did not like the sea. One of the visions of Revelation, it talks about in Revelation 21, is that there will no longer be any sea. It's in Revelation 21. There won't be a sea. And that was, for all the Hebrews, that was like, fantastic God. That sounds like heaven. There's no sea. Okay. So they didn't like the sea. But you've even got in the boat, you've got some fishermen. Some of the disciples were fishermen, right? And even they're terrified. Must have been a bad storm. And Jesus is asleep. Right? He's brought his pillow. He's brought his pillow and he's got it there and he's asleep. I think one of the other versions, one other time, talks about him having a cushion. Right? I got my pillow. I thought I'd bring it in case the service wasn't very interesting and I could, you know, have a snooze here, you know. Now, think about it, right? When you go on a train, have you ever been on a train and the train stops at its destination and the train driver gets out? You see, or they're walking towards the cab? We've got a train driver in this ministry, right? Is that right? Okay. If you see your train driver, what are they normally carrying? They have some kind of bag and they usually have a big, one of those travel coffee mugs, right? Full of coffee. I always see them carrying a coffee mug to keep them awake, I imagine. How would you feel if your train driver was walking along carrying his pillow? Or at an airport? You know, the pilots, they have these fancy bags, right? Imagine that tucked under his arm or under her arm, you've got the pilot walking into the cockpit with their pillow. How would you feel? You'd say, I don't think this flight is the one for me. I'll get a later flight. There's a story in the news recently about pilots falling asleep whilst circling over Heathrow, you know, when they're in the pattern. Apparently, some of them are falling asleep. As part of that, which is worrying, as part of that which says, oh, they trust their autopilot, I suppose. I don't know. But anyway, they're asleep. Jesus is asleep. Even the storm doesn't keep him awake. Now, there are lots of possible lessons from this, but I think one of them must be, even the storm doesn't worry Jesus. Even the storm does not keep him awake. Let me ask the question. What keeps you awake at night? What disturbs your sleep? What makes it hard for you to drop off? Apart from the snoring of your partner. What is it that churns away inside, in the heart and in the mind? What is it that you cannot find the peace of Jesus about? We all have things like that, don't we? Sometimes it's very present, and sometimes it's you're in a little bit of a peace, but you've had times like that, you'll have times like that again. The truth is, we cannot avoid the storms, but we can be in the same boat as Jesus in the storm. And we can find his peace. By calming the wind and the waves, he demonstrates that he has power over the things that make us afraid. And it's his timing. They woke him up. And he'll do it at the right time. He'll give us the peace we need at the right time. He'll sort out the situations at the right time. And if he doesn't sort out the situations, it means that he will give us the strength to handle them. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. God provides a way out. He will give you the strength to stand up under the challenges that you face. We see his peace and we see his power in this amazing passage. We see his peace and we see his power. Some of you here will remember Johan and Tota, who of course were here in East London a few years ago, and they went off to plant the church in Iceland and now are in Stockholm. And some of us were privileged to be in Stockholm 2 weeks ago, and Penny and I had lunch with Johan and Tota. Very special for us because Penny studied the Bible with Tota up in Manchester back in the 90s, a while ago. And it was great to sit down and talk to them, and if you know them, they've been through many challenges. They went through challenges in planting a church and looking after it. They went through health challenges, as Johan had, a mini stroke or a series of strokes, and he was off work for a whole year. And one of their daughters has some very significant health challenges, and it's not been an easy time. They've been through several storms. And we sat down and talked to them, and it's 20 years, I think, since Tota became a Christian and Penny taught her the Bible. But to see someone still hanging in there with God 20 years later, it was great to see the church there. We were on a staff retreat with people from all over the United Kingdom and the Nordic countries, and that was great. But the highlight, and I told Johan and Tota this, for us, the highlight was to see people like them faithful through the storms. Because we talked about that, and then they started to cry, and then we started to cry. But that's what it's about. It's about hanging on to Jesus. He's with us in the storm. He has enough peace for all of us. We're going to go through some difficult times. Tota said, Tota encouraged us a lot by referring to things that Penny had taught her and helped her, and have helped her to understand God and to remain faithful. And she shared about those. And then she said to me, also, Malcolm, there was a time you really encouraged me. And I said, really? It was 20 years ago. She said, yes, I failed a cello exam. You know Tota, she's a very talented musician, an excellent cellist. She was studying at the Royal Northern College of Music, and she failed one of her cello exams. And it devastated her. She's a perfectionist. And some people were a bit down on her about that. And even, sad to say, even some people in the church were like, what did you do wrong? And don't you think you're letting God down by failing an exam? And, some of that kind of stuff. We all feel bad about that. But, we're all perfectly capable of self-righteousness. So that's not, anyway. But she said that Penny encouraged her, and then she said, I rang her and said, you're an excellent cellist. You'll pass the exam. It doesn't matter what other people think of you. What matters is what God thinks of you. She said that really encouraged her. Then she started to cry again. And then I don't remember making that phone call. But what I do know is she found some strength from Jesus through all of that. And let's face it, my friends, we are all in need of the strength that Jesus has for us. What keeps you awake at night? I want to finish the lesson by sharing a few stories. And I share these stories because, particularly for those of us who feel like we're not seeing God's power at work in our lives at this point, in areas that are significant to us. I want to share about, let's move on through these slides. So he calms the wind and the waves, and they're very impressed. It reminds them of this passage from Psalm 107. He stilled the storm to a whisper, the waves of the sea were hushed. This indicates what's happening, that they see Jesus as divine. Because in Old Testament times, although a prophet could affect the weather, only God could affect the wind and the waves. And that, in Psalm 107, is referring to God. And so they're indicating, my goodness, this guy Jesus must actually be deity, because he can do what only God can do. So they see this power. Sometimes we don't see the power. Here's a lady called Juliet. That's her getting baptized many years ago when Penny had a different haircut. And she was baptized, I don't know, 15 years ago or something now, maybe, something like that. Juliet's a wonderful lady in the church in the Four Rivers region of our church, and she has 6 children, and she's been faithful these many years, but she's had a lot of challenges. At this point, none of her children have become Christians, or one became a Christian but is not currently faithful with God. Her husband, they've been married a long time, but he's still yet to become a Christian, and, you know, some of us in this room can understand the challenges that come with that. She's been through significant health challenges, very serious stuff, and some very severe financial challenges, which are ongoing. And for someone like her, you can imagine her getting bitter with God. I've been faithful for all these years. I've given my contribution. I've turned up to all the meetings. I've had a lot of quiet times and prayer. And where is my reward, God? Where is your power to do what I want you to do when I want you to do it? Earlier last year, she met with a group of women in similar circumstances, and she said to these women, who are all married to people who aren't Christians or are single mums and their kids aren't yet Christians and things like that, and she said, you know what, we could all moan about this stuff, but I've noticed in my Bible that people fast a lot, and they fast for 40 days, and so I think we all need to, as a group, fast for 40 days. And all the women were like, okay, that sounds spiritual. Okay. So they decided they would do that, and they would fast, and they would give each other the thing to fast from. Because, you know, sometimes if you choose what you're going to fast from, you may not choose the thing that's challenging. And they know each other well, so they gave each other different things to fast from for 40 days. And they committed themselves to that, and they particularly were fasting for family to become Christians. Children, husbands, whatever, members of families to become Christians. They started on this fast. And very soon after that, Evelyn, as one of the teenagers, started studying the Bible seriously. And her mom, Helena, is a single mom. She was baptized actually while she was pregnant with Evelyn in her womb. And so these many years later, she got serious. She started studying the Bible just as this went on. And she was baptized into Christ very soon after that. Then that, which is a great, lovely photograph. And then Bev, who's the aunt of one of the members, called Lisa Johnson. She's been reaching out to her for 20 years. And then her aunt said, you know what? I think I am interested in God now. It's been 20 years, but now's the time. She came along. She studied the Bible. She became a Christian. She got baptized. Then there was Unity, who's the daughter of a single mom called Esther, who's been a Christian forever. And she hadn't been that interested in the Bible. But then she was run over by a moped. A mum arrived on the scene, not knowing it was her daughter lying in the road. There was a crowd around. She came up, what's going on? It's my daughter. She'd been knocked out cold. They didn't know how bad the injuries were. Took her to the hospital. We were at church, texted us. We all prayed at church. Turns out, by a miracle, she just had bad bruising and concussion. That was on the Friday night. She was at church on Sunday. And she was serious about studying the Bible. And she's been studying the Bible ever since, seriously. Then Mark Wells, who's a member of the church in the Southeast, some of you might know, he contacted me about his father who was dying, and we went to study the Bible with him. And 6 months after all the Bible studies, Marvin, his dad, 73 years old, was baptized into Christ. And he died 2 weeks ago, faithful in God, and we had a memorial service yesterday. What a special thing. Then, also, Marcel, who's one of the daughters of Patsy, who's been a Christian for 20-odd years, and she and her two other sisters were not interested in the Bible, she started coming to church all of a sudden and said, I'm interested in becoming a Christian. She started studying the Bible, and then Marcel was baptized into Christ. And I just love that picture and that one, too. And then, there's a photograph of Marcel from years and years ago, and of course, that also is Lydia. And you know, that was the time when Lydia got serious. Our daughter, and started studying the Bible in Jakarta, Indonesia, of all places. Never expected that. And we were able to fly out there last year and baptize her into Christ. I like that picture. I mean, I could just stay here looking at that for a long time. But anyway, because you all need a cup of tea soon, she was baptized into Christ, and she reached out to her friend Hai Cha, who also got baptized just very recently, just about a month ago. So that's Hai Cha in the middle there, Chinese girl. So she became a Christian, and it goes on. You know, many of these things are things that we or others on that list have prayed for, not just for 5 years, but 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Mark Wells was reaching out to his dad for 20 years. Lisa was reaching out to Bev for 20 years. We've been praying for our daughter for over 20 years. And these things can dispirit you, or they can drive you back to Jesus to follow him and to find the peace that he has. And then we see the power that he has at work. What are you afraid of today? The first man, I think, was afraid of wholehearted commitment. And so was the second man. The first man, overconfident, not really counting the cost. The second man, hesitant. Let us not be overconfident, but let us also not be hesitant. Getting into the boat did not end the story. It did not make life easy. Getting into the boat meant that they were going to go through the storm. And we are going to go through storms in our Christian lives. But those storms are there so that we can find Jesus asleep on his pillow. And as we awaken him, he will provide us with the peace that we need. We have a powerful and a mighty God. We have an amazing Jesus that we follow. If we follow him, we will find him. We will find his peace. We will find his power. And we will be able to do this. Acronym for fear. We'll be able to face everything and rejoice. Isn't that true? We're able to do that because of who we follow. We follow an amazing Jesus. I charge you today. I urge you today. Make a decision to follow him wholeheartedly. Hold nothing back, because it is only if you follow him with all your heart that you will find out who he is and what he can do in you and for you and through you to his glory. To God be the glory. Amen.
It was attractive, actually. I thought I might use this during Malcolm's sermon, but... thanks, Malcolm, for coming over. Very helpful message. Very helpful. I love the way Malcolm helps me connect with Jesus. It's amazing. I thought I understood the passage. You know, you look at the passage. In fact, when he started, I thought, well, I've heard that before. I know the story. I know what happens. But, oh, my goodness. Great being overconfident. That's me. You know what I mean? True Nigerian spirit. Nothing's impossible. I can do anything. My wife reminds me that I can't. But overconfident, sometimes hesitant. It took me a while to become a Christian, just hesitant and not trusting that God is real and will look after me. And even in the boat, just this whole idea that life, that the storms and what keeps me awake at night, there are certain things. Some nights I don't sleep. You think, what's on my mind? What am I worried about? What is stopping me from trusting in what God says? Because Jesus is quite specific about trust in him. And sometimes we get anxious and worried and burdened. It could be health. It could be financial, it could be relationships, it could be children, work, all kinds of things. And for me, one proof of my faith is am I worried? I mean, it's one of these things, you know, these tests you have where you think you can't get out from the fact that because you're worried, you don't trust. You think, well, no, let me explain it another way. No, you don't trust. And that's what it is. And so it's a great test for us all. Let me encourage, if you're the overconfident type, let's put that aside. If you're hesitant, you know, just look around you. It's great being a Christian. Don't waste time looking. Just get into it. You know what I mean? And really and truly, whatever challenges you may face. Those sisters there fasting for 40 days, I was scared that Malcolm was going to give us that challenge. But as we learned last week or the other week before, there's no formula, but there is a spirit of wholeheartedness. Let's be 100% wholehearted. Let's end the service.